topic is reward and punishment, schar va'onesh, and I'm hoping to survey a few of the most important questions that are quoted in the classical Rishonim about this subject. As you see in the introductory paragraph on the source sheet, the first two questions are not necessarily the most important questions or the questions that the Rishonim devote the most time to. However, they frame the significance of the discussion. One of my teachers, Rabbi Shalom Carmi, writes the following story. He was once at a shiva house, or being mevakeh chola, I don't remember exactly which one, and people were commiserating with the Avelim about, it was some sort of a tragic death. And there was a little girl there who piped up and said, I learned in school three different reasons why tragic things happened, and then she listed two of them, and the third one she said, I forgot. So that tends not to be comforting to people who are in distress. And when adapting these discussions for the purpose of nichum, for the purpose of comforting people in distress, a lot of tact needs to be used. What I'm planning to discuss today is not how to properly do nichum aveilim, how to properly do bikur cholim. That's an entirely different discussion. What I want to discuss today is, abstractly speaking, what the Rishonim say about schar va'onesh. And I think that this is best illustrated by a question and an answer that the Ramban mentions. The question basically is the following. Why bother studying about reward and punishment? Does everyone here know the halachos of lulav? Does everyone here know the halachos of ribbis? How can a person go about their life as a Torah Jew unless they're fully versed in all the halachos? So why is it that we're turning our attention so seemingly prematurely to a topic of philosophy, of hashkafa, of schar va'onesh? And the Ramban answers that just as it would be inconceivable not to fulfill the mitzvah of netilas lulav just because we hadn't finished learning the halachos of lulav or the halachos of ribbis for that matter, so too, it's inconceivable that we neglect to fulfill the mitzvah of yediyas Hashem, of knowing Hashem, knowing how Hashem interacts with the world, how He leads the world, what His value system is. It's inconceivable that we should neglect that mitzvah simply because we haven't learned this section of halacha or that one. This is the first paragraph in the Ramban. The Ramban is coming from a slightly different direction, but his intention is basically the same. The Ramban says, in the end of the day, there are big mysteries about schar va'onesh. There are things that we must acknowledge are beyond the ability of our intellect to comprehend. And therefore, says the Ramban, what's the difference if I comprehend 80%, but I'm incapable of comprehending 20%, or if I comprehend 5%, and I neglect to comprehend 95%? In the end of the day, it's the same mystery. There's the same lack of comprehension. So why should I devote my time to increasing my comprehension of schar va'onesh from 5% to 80%, if in the end of the day, it'll remain a mystery? And to that, the Ramban answers, and this is on the third line of the first source, Ki no'il le'atzmenu b'limud she'ezkarnu. We will help ourselves with this study that we mentioned, li'yosenu chachamim v'yod'ei Elokim yisbarach. It will make us wiser, and it will help us know Hashem Yisbarach. Miderech HaKeil, from God's path, umi ma'asav, and from his deeds. The Ode, and furthermore, says the Ramban, Nihye ma'aminim, we will believe better, we'll be better believers, we'll be more faithful. Uvotchim be'emunaso, will display concrete, practical trust. Be'emunas, botchim be'emunasenu. Binoda ubinalam, both. We are those things that we are aware of are concerned. That's the noda, what we know. And also the ne'alam, will be more faithful to Hashem for after studying these subjects than someone who had not studied these subjects. Ki nilmod saso mina miforash. We can learn that 20% that we're incapable of comprehending, we can appreciate the wisdom behind it and the goodness behind it by observing the 80% that we're capable of comprehending, and then generalizing from what we comprehend to what we don't comprehend, that just like what we comprehend is wise and good, so too what we don't comprehend is also wise and good. Therefore, leida yosher hadin, to know the straightness of Hashem's judgment, v'tzedek hamishpat, and the righteousness of the mishpat of Hashem's judgment. So this, here the Ramban basically says that the purpose of this topic that we're studying over the next 2 days is not to comfort ourselves and not to repeat over like a philosophical list to comfort others. The purpose is to enhance our knowledge of Hashem and to enhance our emuna and our bitachon, our faith, and our belief in Hashem. This also seems to emerge from a second question that the Ramban addresses. And that question, says the Ramban, is why did the prophets and the sages constantly complain about bad things happening to good people and good things happening to bad people? Didn't they understand how Hashem runs the world? They were the Nevi'im. If anyone understood Hashem, it was them. Or at least, didn't they trust that Hashem runs the world according to a good plan? They were the Nevi'im, they were the Tzaddikim, they were the Chachamim of all the generations. And so why are they so troubled by the question of Tzaddik V'ralo, Rasha V'tovlo, if there's anyone who should not be troubled by that question? It's the Nevi'im and the Chachamim. And to this, the Ramban gives an answer. And he says, again, it's the highlights, the bolded words on the first line. He explains that when the Nevi'im and the Chachamim pose this question of how can it be that there is tzaddikim who experience suffering and rishayim who experience comfort in this world, it's kedivrei hachole, like an ill person, shemitzta'er al chayo, who's pained by his illness. And he almost exaggerates how difficult the illness is to bear. And he cries out, because of how intense the pain and the hurt are. So they're not crying out for an answer. They know what they know, and they also know that they don't know what they can't know. So that's not why they're crying out. They're crying out because it's a natural thing for a person who's in pain to cry out. And the form that their cry takes is this particular question. But the question is not a question that comes from ignorance, nor is it a question that comes from the quest for enlightenment. The question is simply an expression to Hashem, unburdening themselves to Hashem, saying, the pain that you've sent me is very intense. Mashal l'ma davar dome. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, in his Sichos Musar, has 6 chapters that are the shmuzim that he delivered to the Mir Yeshiva during the Six-Day War. Sorry, during the Yom Kippur War. I actually just finished translating those shmuzim. I was hoping that it would be a chizuk for the broader Olam HaTorah here, in America at large, to have a translation of those shmuzin, because they're very inspiring, and I'm very glad that hopefully my efforts will be rendered too late. I think it'll still be inspirational, but I'm very, very happy that it's not going to be as necessary as it was a few days ago. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz writes the following. We know that the Mabul is named after Noach. May Noach Zoisli. Asher Nishbati may Avor May Noach Oid Al Haaretz. Hashem says, I swore that I will never bring Noach's waters, his flood, his Mabul, again on the world. And Chazal say, why is it called May Noach? Because Noach should have davened for his generation. He should have davened for them, and he didn't. And therefore, he is partially to blame for the suffering that befell them. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz asks a powerful question. We know how many tzaddikim were there in the generation of Noach.
None.
Only him.
Let's count. There was Noach, Shem, Cham, and Yafes, and then there were their wives. So Noach's wife and Shem's wife and Cham's wife and Yafes's wife. That makes eight.
Tzaddikim. The Torah calls him tzaddik.
The Torah
calls Noach tzaddik.
Noach was a tzaddik, and his sons, if they deserved to survive the Mabul, probably were also tzaddikim.
Maybe there was his chud.
It was in the zechus of Noach.
Yeah, he was the only tzaddik.
The Torah said Noach is tzaddik.
Oh. So Rashi, when he's discussing Avraham, mentions the following. He says, why did Avraham stop praying for Sodom after 10 tzaddikim? He said, Hashem, if there are 10 tzaddikim in Sodom, then maybe you'll save the city. And Hashem said, yes, I'll save them if there are 10 tzaddikim. And then it says, Avram stopped. Vayelech vayashav Avram limkomo. So why didn't he keep on davening? Why didn't he say, Hashem, if there are 9 tzaddikim in Sodom, if there are 8 tzaddikim in Sodom, will you save the city? And Rashi explains, he learned from Noah. Because at the time of the Mabul, there were 8 tzaddikim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts also. So there were 9, and it was insufficient to save the world.
You need the minion,
precisely. That's
11.
Early Makar. 11? Because of the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah doesn't count. The Shekhinah does not count for a minion.
So the women did come from minion.
You find by the Shvatim, when they sold the Shvatim...
That minion was the only minion that they had.
I sat in the corner.
You're welcome to sit in the corner.
Thank you.
You're welcome, please.
20 years.
It was the air conditioning upstairs.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's difficult.
Thank you.
It's but maybe after the shiur, so then it'll be easier to bear.
They had 120 touché. Years to go after two people, not three people, and then what it had 10, you think in 120. Had he known two or three people,
he
had
120
years.
So let me take a step backwards for a second. There's an insight which is quoted by Rabbi Yisrael Miller, formerly of Pittsburgh and now of Calgary, in the introduction to his book, A Gift for Yom Tov. And in the introduction to this book, he writes that Musar Shmuzin are a combination of analysis and of poetry. What that means is that sometimes when one is listening to a Musar Shmuz, it's true that there are other answers to a question that is posed by the one delivering the Shmuz. However, the particular answer that's chosen is chosen because, in a sense, it's the most poetic, it's the most inspiring, it captures something of the essence of what it means to be a Jew, of what it means to be a Ben Torah. And even if it's not the only answer, and it may not even be the most compelling answer, but it's definitely that whatever the answer is captures a deep truth about the experience of being a spiritually striving and ambitious person, and that's why the answer is quoted in the Shmuz. The goal of a Shmuz is not to be like a shiur in Lamdos, where we ask a question and then we survey the range of answers and then we analyze the strengths and the weaknesses of each one. The goal of the Shmuz is to help us better understand what it means, what it means for us to be B'nai Torah and B'nai Aliyah and people who strive for ascent, and therefore whichever answer is best able to convey and to capture the essence of that experience is the answer that is chosen. Obviously, no one's going to choose a wrong answer, a false answer. However, one answer out of a number, one possibility out of a number is highlighted in order to shed light on the experience of being a Ben Aliyah. And so, I think that all of you are sensitive to this in the other solutions that you're suggesting. And yes, you could say other answers. So let's treat for a moment as the poetic dimension of the Musar Shmuz. This is the question that Reb Chaim Shmulevitz poses. We know from Avraham that 9 tzaddikim were insufficient to save. So why was Noach blamed for failure to daven? Okay, you could say, yeah, maybe if he davened together with the 9 tzaddikim, would have been enough. But Avraham's tefillos together with the 9 tzaddikim still wouldn't have been enough. And so we see that even tefillah combined with 9 tzaddikim wouldn't be enough. So if there were only 9 tzaddikim, why is Noach blamed for his failure to daven? And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz gives the following answer. He says there are two dimensions of tefillah. There is the simple dimension of tefillah. I daven, I beg Hashem for something, and Hashem grants my request. But there's a second dimension to tefillah as well. And that is the empathic dimension, the dimension of empathy. When I daven for somebody, it means that I feel their pain. I feel their suffering. Who? Bill Clinton.
Javi, please.
He said it.
Yes,
you'll have to give me the marimako.
It's an ilchot empathy.
Ah. Noach didn't daven, and that meant that he didn't feel proper pain for the generation of the Mabel. So you'll say, so what? So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz explains, based on something there, Itzla Paterberger, Blazer, the Talmud of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, writes, Hatsur tamim pa'alo ki chal derach of mishpat. Kel emuna ve'in avel tzadik ve'yashar hu. So Hashem is just, he doesn't distort judgment. Frater of Itzla Paterberger, and we distort judgment? We're also supposed to be just. We're also supposed to not distort justice. So why are we praising Hashem? What's the uniqueness of Hashem's judgment that the Pasuk is elaborating on? And he answers as follows. This is Reb Chaim Shmulevitz's answer. When we judge a person in a court down here, a court of flesh and blood, so the only person being judged is the defendant. And if the defendant is guilty, then he has to suffer the consequences of his action, regardless of whom else will be harmed by his suffering those consequences. Even if a friend will be hurt, a relative will be hurt by the Beis Din's execution of the punishment, the Beis Din doesn't have permission to pardon him simply because an undeserving friend or relative will be hurt. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kel Emuna Vein Avel. There is no injustice whatsoever. Hashem will not punish a person unless everyone who is hurt by that punishment is deserving. If there's one undeserving person who will be hurt, then Hashem will commute the punishment. Had Noach felt hurt more by the pain of his generation by the pain that the Mabel would bring on them, Hashem may not have brought the Mabel. Because Noach was deserving of the pain, and his pain that he would have experienced without cause would have made it impossible for Hashem, Hatzur Tamim Pa'alo, Ki Chal Derech of Mishpat, to bring about the Mabel. And so Noach was blamed that he didn't daven, he didn't yell, he didn't cry out. Because when a person's in pain, he cries out, even if the simple dimension that begging Hashem to save them and being responded to, that's not going to work. Even if you beg Hashem with only 9 tzaddikim, it's not going to save the people. But he was blamed because a person who's in pain yells, even if it won't help at all. And Noach didn't yell like that. And so it's called Mei Noach.
We say the concept tzaddik bepels. You know, there's a Yiddish expression, tzaddik and pels.
Pels.
You know what that means?
Tzaddik bepelva. He's in a fur coat. That's what they say about Noach.
Okay.
He's warm. He doesn't care that other somebody else is cold.
Okay, it's a good expression. Yeah.
There's a similar shot.
Yeah, but that's what you just say. It's in different words, that's all.
Okay, I should write it down. Pels.
It's all nine. It's all yellow.
There's two ways to keep it.
And it's actually a key to the Shabbat.
The earth did not.
Maybe
it was deserving of punishment, but because it would affect humanity,
it's a good chat. I like it. Okay, I want to give some other examples of this idea, but I think that it's better if we move on. So one other thing that Reb Chaim Shmulevitz mentions is that was why Eov was punished. When Paro said, Hava nischach malo, let's plan to drown Jewish babies, so Eov was quiet. Like so many countries are quiet now when terrorists are saying, let's murder Jewish babies. And Hashem brought the Yisurei Eov, the suffering of Eov upon Eov, in punishment for his silence. But even if he had protested, it wouldn't have helped. Yisro protested and it didn't help. So you'll say, yeah, but maybe if Yisro and Eov had protested, so then it would have helped. So that's an analytic answer. But the poetic answer is that Eov didn't yell because he didn't feel empathy for the Jews. If a person feels empathy for someone, they yell because it hurts. And when it hurts, you yell even if it won't help. And that's why Hashem visited all these sufferings on Eov. He yelled out, even though when he was hurting, the yelling wasn't gonna help. But it showed him, what's the Yiddish expression?
What?
What's the Yiddish? No, no.
Shrine?
No, there's the full. If it hurts, you yell. Shrayin. Okay. Yeah. It's also famous. The Briskarov was famous that when the crisis over the children of Tehran, without going into the history of it, took place. So the Briskarov was big activist. He was trying to get everyone to protest. So somebody said to him, "It's not going to help." And he said, "Is titvei shrayin hurts shreitman shreitman yashikalach?" I apologize for my horrendous Yiddish. Okay, when it hurts, you yell, even if it won't help. So that's what the Nevi'im were doing. They were yelling. It's not because they didn't know the answer, and it's not because they weren't aware that there were parts of the answer that were beyond the realm of their comprehension. They were asking this question because, hopefully, I'll get it right this time. The tit, vein, vei, tit, vei, shreitman. Okay, when it hurts, you yell. So they were yelling.
So in other words, these 64 soldiers that died in this this war, each and every one of us was affected by it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took to make sure that it didn't hurt somebody. I mean, all Klal Yisrael was hurting. Even one dies, we hurt.
Yeah.
It's not only the mishpacha that are hurting, it's all Klal Yisrael that are hurting for every soul that departs us.
Right. So what's the answer? The only thing that we can do is we can work on being more empathic, and we can work on being more deserving. In some way, that means that all of us deserved whatever hurt we experienced. That's what we're going to get to next, passively. But it means that the solution is, the more that we feel hurt by someone else's pain, the less likely they are to experience pain. And the less that we deserve that pain, the less likely that they are to experience it.
It's arvis. Arvis. That's what arvis means. Unfortunately, we don't feel arvis only when it's in a tzara. It's tzara.
This is what Reb Chaim Shmulevitz wrote. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz wrote, he said, we're Bnei Yeshiva, we're sitting in Yeshiva, and in order for our learning to be the best zechus for the soldiers, we have to do everything we can to imagine ourselves in their shoes, to feel what they're feeling, to experience what they're experiencing. We have to be as hurt as... We have to feel as hurt as they're feeling, as anxious as they're feeling. The more that we work on that, writes Reb Chaim to the people in the Mir Yeshiva, the more salvation they will experience. So again, what this question and answer of the Ramban highlights is that, to a certain extent, there's a difference between someone who's crying out in pain, someone who needs a nechama, someone who needs to be comforted, and someone who's seeking to understand, to have yediyas Hashem, and to strengthen their emunah. When a person's in pain and yells out, Hashem, why are you doing this to me? So it's not because they don't necessarily know the answer. It's not because the right thing to tell them is, well, there are six answers and here they are. Because that's not why they're yelling. They're yelling because they're in pain. And that's a totally different, it requires a totally different response. So now, focusing on the Yediyas Hashem, the Chizuk HaBitachon dimension, we'll turn to the questions themselves. So why do bad things happen to good people? What are the solutions that are offered in Chazal, that are offered in Yishonim, to understand the Hanhagas Hashem, the Derech Hashem, with regard to this question of Tzadik Viralo? So we have here, I actually didn't count them before I printed them, so I'm going to count them now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I have 9 different answers. Six of them are on this sheet. They're all quotations from the Ramban's Shar HaGmul, which is found in the Sefer Toras HaAdam, the Sefer that the Ramban wrote, which details all of the halachos and hashkafos that range from the time that a person becomes ill until the end of the morning. So all these quotations are from the Ramban, but obviously the Ramban is basing himself very, very firmly on Chazal, and if you look inside, the Ramban is printed in volume 2 of Rav Chavel's edition of the Kisvei HaRamban, and if you look inside, the Ramban will quote pretty much all of, or many of, these statements in Chazal that he's basing each of his approaches upon. So let's go through them one by one. The first approach that the Ramban has about why bad things happen to good people is probably the most widely known approach. That is, we'll read it from the beginning, HaTzadik Hazeh, this Tzadik, Shehu Beinoni, we're talking about a person who's a Beinoni, he's not entirely meritorious, he's got lots of zichuyos, but also some averos. The Hakadosh Baruch Hu b'chasadav harabim, and God in His great kindness, matelo klapi chesed, He weighs the scale for him towards kindness. The osa oso kitzadik gamur, and He treats him like a complete tzadik, and therefore eino yored legehenim, He will be spared from the punishments of Gehenim. Ela, instead, nidon be'olam hazeh, He's judged in this world, alavonos v'chatayim she'asa, for the sins and averos that he did. And through this, v'nitzal midina shel gehinom, he'll be saved from the even more horrible suffering of Gehenim. I have to tell you an amazing story about this. I had a Talmid one time, a very, very sweet and refined individual, who approached me and he asked me, Rebbe, is it true that Hashem makes people suffer to atone for their averos? And I didn't know why he was asking the question, but the answer is what it is. The answer is yes. So I said, yes, but why do you ask? Can I explain to you a little bit further? So he said, Rebbe, you've comforted me because I did a lot of averos when I was younger. And I was always worried what's going to be because of those averos that I did. But now, he said, I'm going through a very, very difficult time. I'm experiencing a lot of suffering. And you've made me happy, Rebbe, because I know that the suffering I'm experiencing now is atoning for the averos that I did earlier. And I was amazed by the beauty, the simplicity, the refinement of that response.
How old was this Talmud?
He was in his late teens or early 20s.
Late teens, but you don't get punished until you're...
Dini Shemayim. Maybe it was his early 20s. I know, when we say 20 years for Dini Shemayim, so do we mean like literally 20 years, you know, at the birthday? When it comes to Dine Adam, so we say it's really Taloyin Simonim, when a person reaches physical maturity, as evidenced by the Shtei Sairos, so then there is a punishment that could range any time from a 13 until much, much later.
How does a person know if he's getting punished for previous life or for this life?
Oh, We'll get there in a second.
A person could just do tshuva and get rid of the virus, or tshuva me'akva, the virus becomes chus.
I'm sure that if he was thinking along these lines, he was doing alaviros shabiyada, was worried about what he had done, that's already very, very close to tshuva, and he did vidoy, he told me what they were. He shouldn't necessarily have told me, but I'm sure that he told Hashem what they were before he told me it. He just told me for a different reason. And the Gemara in Yuma, though, says that there are certain averos that in order for a person to do a complete tshuva, he has to accept on himself the suffering, because it's only the tshuva together with the suffering that he accepts which will atone for them. So there are averos where part of the tshuva process is accepting suffering on oneself. The Rambam also writes this. The Rambam writes that midarkei ha-tshuva, part of the path of tshuva, a person who wants to walk down that path and reach the terminus, reach the destination, reach the state of pure tshuva, pure return, pure forgiveness. So part of that derech hatshuva is to change a person's place and to change a person's dress. There are certain things that a person has to accept on himself in order for the tshuva to work properly. So this is the first approach in the Ramban, that a person may be suffering in this world so that he can get his full reward in the next world. The next approach that the Ramban says, it's a longer quote, but I'll just read the first line. It says, Hamisa v'ayisurin, death and suffering, ba'in al-chit shekadam le'av. It could come because of his ancestors' sins. Not necessarily for his own, but for those of his ancestors. Now, at this point, I don't want to get into a whole discussion about the contradictions, or the seeming contradictions, within the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, or between the Chamisha Chumshei Torah and Sefer Yechezkel, about this particular topic. There are what seem to be conflicting sources in the Psukim. Some Psukim say, Poked avon avos al banim, that Hashem remembers the sins of the ancestors and punishes the children. But other psukim say ish bichet o yumasu, that a person will only die for his own sins. In Sefer Eicha, Megillas Eicha, it says, Avosenu chatu ve'enam, our ancestors sinned and they are no more. Vanachnu es avonoseim savalnu, we are experiencing, we have to demonstrate patience because of their sins. So that seems to say, Pokeda avon avos albanim, that people can suffer for their ancestors' sins. However, in Sefer Yechezkel, the Pasuk says, I don't remember the exact quote, but again, something along the lines of Ish Bechet O Yumasu, that Bishuv Rasha Mevish O, so then he will be absolved, and his descendants will be absolved. And a person will only be punished if he himself committed Averos. So again, without going through a comprehensive survey of the approaches that Chazal take, and that the Mefarshim of Chumash take to resolving these contradictions, thank you so much. I think I was thinking of a different pasuk in Yechezkel. I have to find. I spent a few minutes looking for it this morning. I have it in my notes, but I didn't have my notes with me. Okay, we'll have to find it a different time. But there's a whole parasha.
I have a question. I don't understand. If a father is a Russian and Ben is a tzaddik, why does he have to pay for his father's sins? What did he do? He's a tzaddik. You know, I mean, doesn't really, I mean... What is it?
It's a pasuk in our group.
Right, okay, so let me take a step back, because your question is a good question, it's a valid question, and I really want to discuss, I don't want anyone to go out of here with questions on any of the approaches. So if anyone has a question and they want to share it with everyone, that's why I've allotted more than one shiur for this topic, please share your questions. If anyone has a question and they don't want to share it with everyone, but they're interested in researching it further, so take out your pen and a paper. I'll give you my email address, and you can email me the question. I'm going to close my eyes. Anyone wants to take out a paper, my email address is by, as in Beis Yitzchak, 5766, as in Tavshin Samach Vav, @gmail.com. So anyone who has any questions, if anyone wants to research any of these topics further, please feel very, very invited to email me, and I'll be happy to send further sources to enter further discussion about this. So let me address this question over here. Obviously, a large part... 5766, as in Tafshin Samach Vav. So, a large part...
What's so special about 8 years ago?
So what's special is that when I first got email, it took me a couple of years to learn how to use it, and I finally learned how to use email properly the year that I was the editor of a journal, Torah journal, called Beis Yitzchak, and that was Tavshin Samach Vav. So this was the email address of the journal, which forced me to finally learn how to use email, and then the next year, they were BY5767. So I kept the old one because, like, why should I have too many email accounts? I just kept on using it.
Gematria for something.
Took your born maybe in 1966, and that's how you
showed it. Okay. Yeah. So that's the background behind
it. Oh, it's much younger.
So a large part of the answer to that question will depend on how one resolves those contradictions. So, for instance, there's one opinion in Chazal that says that the children will only suffer for the parents' sins if they continue in the parents' sinful ways. So by doing that, they make things worse, so to speak, and therefore Hashem can punish them more than someone who has righteous parents. That's one approach. Ochiz ma'asei avoseyem bideyem. That, just like we know, a person who has a chance to do tshuva and neglects to do tshuva compounds the avera. And a person who's morgul, who's accustomed to doing an avera over and over and over again, so their accustomedness, I don't know the proper word for it, that compounds the severity of the Avera. And so if a person is part of a chain that reaches back to his ancestors, that also can compound the severity of the Avera. So that's one approach that's taken, that Hashem is only poked avos al banim when their oches maasei avoseihem bidehem. A second approach, which I think will also address your question, is that maybe there's a difference between dine adam, dine shamayim. It's not going to address all of the contradictions, but at least some of them, because when it says ish bechet o yumasu, that's a directive to the beastin, to the beastin of basar v'dam, flesh and blood. So they're not allowed to punish any descendants for the ancestor sins. But maybe in Dini Shemayim, things could be a little bit different. But again, that's not 100% going to answer your question, because the question is, why in Dini Shemayim does it work that way? So you have to come back to the first answer. Yes?
We know Ben Karadavua. So if you say that a person has this chut to bring the neshama higher in this world, so the flip side is true also. If I can be Mzaka, a father, a neshama, so you can say the flip side too, right? That he would get punished all the same way if a son could be Ma'ala the neshama, he learns, he makes a siyam, he does the mitzvahs, the shem, shay, nashat, sur, b'chayim. So the same way, he begins to have the hurt. You know what I'm saying? Well, it's two sides, not one side. Don't look at it only as a negative. It's two sides to a coin, that's what I'm trying to say. You're saying that the son can get punished, but at the same time, he has a certain kayak that he could also elevate his neshama, as far as neshama, which nobody else could do.
So let me ask a question on your answer, and then I'll answer the question.
So take it over.
So, it's a good answer, but I think it needs to maybe be qualified a little bit.
Thank you.
So, one second. So, yeah, but for a person to suffer for their ancestors' sins, the way I always understood bra kara davua in the sense of a son being able to create merits for an ancestor is that a person doesn't only get rewarded for what he himself has done, but he also gets rewarded for all of the things that he indirectly caused. So if I did a good deed, and someone else was inspired by that, and a third person was inspired by the second person, and a fourth by the third, then in some sense, I get rewarded for all of them. There's probably a business model that has a nice catchy name for that phenomenon, but that's how Hashem works when he gives out when he splits the profits. He gives a person some amount of reward for every single good deed that was, however indirectly, it came about. And so if a person brings a son or a daughter into the world, and that son and daughter do good deeds, so the person is rewarded, because if not for them, if not for their initiative, so the son and daughter, and the son and daughter's good deeds, would never have come about.
Royalties.
I think there's an even better... I once think I read something that had an even more precise term for this particular type of model, like a sales model. I convinced someone else to be a salesman for the company.
Pyramid.
Pyramid model. Okay. We're not bound in Lashon HaTorah by the same connotations that are elsewhere. So if that's the case, though, it may not necessarily work backwards. Meaning the father, his initiative enabled the son's good deeds, but the son's initiative didn't enable the father to do anything. So I'm not 100% sure that the son then, or the father's, right, that the son should suffer for the father's sins. But I think that the direction that you're going is the correct direction. And that is that very often people perceive of themselves, or others perceive of them, as not being an individual person as much as being an individual family. Whether it's a nuclear family or the extended family, anthropologists have pointed out that in early cultures, the idea of a family viewing itself as a single, simple unit was much more prevalent than nowadays. And so therefore, it's possible that when a person when a person is suffering for the sin of an earlier member of the family, that's because either they or we or the Torah view them as a single unit with their family. And in a sense, that's what brakara davua means. It means that the child is like a limb of the parent, because every member of the family is like another limb in the body that family is. And so therefore, from that perspective, it certainly is more justified and easier to understand why my finger can hurt for an aveira that my nose did, and also why a different member of the family can hurt for the aveira that was performed by an ancestor.
First of all, on a global level, we all are suffering from Adam's hate. We have Misa, we don't realize, it's all because we're all children of Adam. So we are suffering from that thing. Let me give another example on a physical level. I have sugar problems. Why? My father had sugar problems. Maybe his father had sugar problems. Get it? In a spiritual way, somehow, you know, whatever. It's in the DNA, certain things that have to, I'm saying a spiritual level, whatever. We'll figure it out.
So this is the Ramban's second approach.
By the way, I do agree with you on genetics, but not on spiritual matters. I'm sorry. When you come into this world, you're supposed to come with a clean slate, not with a whole bag of problems that your father had.
No, you have to be Messiah.
And I'm saying again, if you're a tzaddik, and Alenu, your father was not a tzaddik, you shouldn't be having to carry his baggage, because you are you, and he is he. Everybody guys come. That's why it says that Torah is Morasha, it's not Yerusha. You have to work for yourself. It doesn't mean because your father is Rabbi Feinstein that you're going to get Gan Eden
through.
It doesn't mean that.
No,
Moshe Rabbeinu had sons that were.
That's right. Torah's not
so what? So it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean anything.
But I'm saying the reality is, the fact is that since you're born...
but you're bringing two different things. You're bringing genetics and you're bringing the spiritual to the same type of thing.
Okay, so we'll this machlokes we'll put on hold for a moment, and we can reconvene after the shiur to hammer out the... So the third...
We'll talk later.
The third approach that the Ramban has to helping us understand how Hashem runs the world with Schar Va'onesh is an approach which the Ramban does not articulate explicitly. He doesn't tell us what it is. He just hints at it. But the Ramchal, who's the author of the Mesilas Yesharim, in a different work of his, the Derech Hashem, explains it at greater length. This quote here is from the Ramban, and primarily because the program that I was using didn't have the Ramchal Derech Hashem on it. I wasn't able to find the Hebrew text that I was able to cut and paste into here. So I quoted the Ramban's hint, but I'll explain it based on the Ramchal. The Ramban writes, Yesh b'tayna hazos. This answer, he's commenting on a pasuk in Sefer Iov, and he says, Yesh b'tayna hazos, sod, a secret, a mystery. Nimsar la'anshei haTorah v'haKabbalah. That's given over from teacher to student amongst the people who belong to the chain of tradition, the chain of Kabbalah, of receiving traditions from their teacher. V'hu ramuz, it's alluded to, it's hinted at, v'divrei raboseinu, in the words of our teachers, in Chazal, in the Gemara, v'nichlal, and it's included, b'inyan sod ha'ibur. The Sod HaIbor. So the Sod HaIbor, I believe, is a reference to the idea of the Gilgulim of Neshamos. The idea that in order for a soul, for a Neshama, to accomplish what it's meant to accomplish in this world, it sometimes must make many return trips to the world in order to accomplish it. And even more so, if it broke something in the world, so it needs to come back and make a return trip in order to fix what it broke. I remember when I was in first grade, so my Rebbe told a story about Gilgul HaNeshamos that still
reverberates.
It was a Maisla. He told the class Maislach, and this was one of the Maislach that he told the class.
In first grade, you're young enough.
Yeah, there. It's amazing. I remember still. there's lots of things that I don't remember from first grade. I remember the first thing that I learned on the first day of first grade, just to get a sense of how powerful that is. The Yom Knisa, the beginning of something, makes such a powerful impression. And then, here's the Yankuso. But this is. And this story I remember as well. It somehow was a very striking story at the time, and it must have really made an impression on me. I'll tell you the story very briefly. A chassid is talking with his rebbe, and the rebbe says, "Let me tell you the following story." He says, "There one time was a kernel of wheat, and the kernel of wheat was growing in the field, and it was looking forward to halavai that." Going a step back. There was a neshama that went up to the beast in Shalmala, and they decreed on the neshama that it should come down into this world and rectify something that it had done improperly. However, the neshama was sent down into a kernel of wheat. A difficult situation if you want to rectify what something that you had broken. And so this neshama was languishing there in the kernel of wheat and saying, how can I fix what I broke? So he says, maybe a Jew will buy me and make me into matzah, or maybe he'll make me into lechem mishnah, and maybe he'll make a bracha on me. And so, you know, he's sitting there and wondering what his fate will be, and finally he's harvested, and nevach, he's sold to a guy. And the guy is a distiller. He makes beer out of this kernel of wheat, and so here the neshama is... somehow attached to a bottle of beer, and he's sitting there in the guy's cabinet, and he's like, there's no way that anything's going to happen now. And then one day the guy takes out the bottle of beer, and lo and behold, there is a Jew in the room. The Jew came for a business meeting with the guy. And so this neshama is jumping for joy. I finally have an opportunity to rectify what I had broken. And the Jew sits down at the table, pours himself a glass, and drinks it.
Without a bracha.
And the Rebbe turned to this chassid and said, "Do you know whose neshama it was? It was the neshama of your father." And the chassid faints, because he had been the one in that meeting who had forgotten to make the bracha. So now you understand why I still remember that story.
That's enough to scare you to make a bracha every time. You never miss it.
So this is a little bit about the Sod HaIbor, the Gilgal HaNeshamos, that sometimes in order for a person to fix what he broke in a previous lifetime, he may need to accept on himself Yisurin, to be Mekabel Yisurin Be'ahava in this world in order to fix that. So that's something which the Ramban alludes to, and which the Ramchal in Derech Hashem elaborates on at greater length. Now the Ramchal adds on something else, which I think that you mentioned earlier. And that is that there are two other types of brokenness that the suffering of a person can fix. Not just something that he broke in a previous lifetime, but something perhaps that his contemporaries broke in his own generation. And sometimes, this is not something that Hashem brings to everyone, but if a person is a volunteer, if a person volunteers and says, "Hashem, I want to fix what other people broke," and lots of people do this in the ordinary sense, you've got doctors who fix bones that other people broke, and psychologists and social workers who fix feelings that other people broke, and there are construction, repair people who fix machines and roads and buildings that other people broke. So lots of people in the world are engaged in fixing at a physical level things that other people broke in order that the other people should be able to better enjoy them. And not everyone gets paid for this. There are some people who do this on a volunteer basis. And so too, says the Mesilas, says the Derech Hashem, this happens in the spiritual world as well. There are heroic volunteers, people who agree to experience suffering in order to fix what other people in their generation broke. And not only that, there are people who volunteer, who are spiritual volunteers, and they accept suffering on themselves to fix things that were broken with previous generations up to Adam HaRishon. They're all fixing the world. They're cleaning the world up from its pollution, and they're doing it on a volunteer basis. Yesterday in Yeshiva, I spoke on one of the kinos on the kino of the Asara Ruge Malchus, Arzi Levano Nadiri Torah, and I mentioned the Gemara in Brachos on Samach Aleph Amud Beis, where Rabbi Akiva's students ask him a question that Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Zo Torah v'zo Schara, is this a reward for Rabbi Akiva's tremendous diligence and creativity and toil in Torah? Is this his reward that they comb his flesh with iron combs and then sell his meat in the marketplace, its weight on a scale? That was a question that Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I can't answer that question. But when Rabbi Akiva's students asked him the same question, Rabbi Akiva gave them an answer. And Rabbi Akiva's answer was, he said, I've been waiting for this opportunity for my whole life. Every day when I said, V'ahavta is Hashem Elokecha, v'chol levavcha uv'chol nafshecha uv'chol meodecha. And I thought to myself that the meaning of this pasuk is, afilu notel es nafshecha, even if Hashem takes your life, give it with love. And I said, Masa yavu liyadi v'akaymena, when will I have the opportunity to fulfill this pasuk? And now Hashem gave me the opportunity. So why was Rabbi Akiva waiting for this? Says the Ramchal, I'm elaborating a little bit. Rabbi Akiva was a volunteer. He said, Hashem, I volunteer if you give me the opportunity to fix things that my generation broke. If you give me the opportunity, I want through my suffering to fix things that Adam HaRishon broke. I want to fix the world. I want to make the world a complete, a shalem place. Just give me the chance. And Hashem gave him the chance. That was Rabbi Akiva's answer to this puzzling question. So again, it may be like Rabbi Yochanan said, sometimes we'll say, we don't want it anymore. We need to step back. We're rescinding our volunteerism. We're taking it back. Rabbi Yochanan did that on occasion. He said, lo hein v'lo scharan about the Yisurin. But there are others who can tolerate it more, and for them, they volunteer to experience suffering, to fix things, not just that they had broken themselves and needed to fix, but that other people had broken because they're so altruistic. And that's a fourth and fifth approach that the Ramchal adds to this idea. I think it belongs conceptually together with the Soda Ibur, that sometimes tzaddikim, good people, righteous people, pure people, experience suffering in order to fix things that they broke or that others broke or that Adam HaRishon broke. And very often that's done not because it's imposed upon them against their will. Sometimes they can opt out and Hashem will away the suffering, but sometimes it's because they volunteer for the position. Yes?
Very beautiful shout on Zutar of Zuzchara that Rav Hashem answered the Malachim, if you continue asking me, I'll have to turn the world back to Tov Avodah. And in most cases, it seems that that's, you know, I'm just going to destroy the whole world. Stop bothering me, so to speak. But I heard a beautiful pshat that Hashem said, if we go back to Tohu Vavohu, and I show you the whole pattern, then you will understand why.
The Taylor story.
But you'll understand why. So it wasn't so much a complaint that I'll have to destroy the world, but if we go back to Tohu Vavohu, and I show you how I did everything, then you'll understand why Tzadik Olam.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That's what the Ramban keeps on emphasizing, that very often it's really beyond the finitude of our comprehension. There's something, whether it's 20% or 50% or 80%, whatever it is, there will always be something that's beyond our comprehension. I don't want to interrupt. I know that the next Magid Shir was told by...
Yeah.
Was told that we start promptly, yeah, and that we finish promptly. So I don't want to. So Be'ezras Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up with the remaining answers that the Ramban offers to this question, and then we'll continue on to the next question, the question of Rasha B'Tovlo. Sure.